Section 5 of The Death of Lord Nelson. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by FNH. The Death of Lord Nelson by William Beatty. Section 5. Appendix. Instructions. Issued by Lord Nelson to the admirals and captains of his fleet several days previous to the battle. Victory, off Cadiz, 10th of October, 1805. General memorandum sent to the commanders of ships. Thinking it almost impossible to bring a fleet of 40 sail of the line into a line of battle in variable winds, thick weather, and other circumstances which must occur, with such a loss of time that the opportunity would be lost of bringing the enemy to battle in such a manner as to make the business decisive, I have therefore made up my mind to keep the fleet in the position of sailing, with the exception of the first and second in command, that the order of the sailing is to be the order of battle, placing the fleet in two lines of 16 ships each, with an advanced squadron of 8 of the fastest sailing two-deck ships, which will always make, if wanted, a line of 24 sail, on whichever line the Commander-in-Chief may direct. The second-in-command will, after my intentions are made known to him, have the entire direction of his line, to make the attack upon the enemy, and to follow up the blow until they are captured or destroyed. If the enemy's fleet should be seen to windward in line of battle, and that the two lines and advance squadron could fetch them, they will probably be so extended that their van could not succour their rear. I would therefore probably make the second-in-command signal to lead through about their 12th ship from the rear, or wherever he could fetch, if not able to get so far advanced. My line would lead through about their centre, and the advance squadron to cut 3 or 4 ships ahead of their centre, so as to ensure getting at their commander-in-chief, on whom every effort must be made to capture. The whole impression of the British fleet must be to overpower from 2 or 3 ships ahead of their commander-in-chief, supposed to be in the centre, to the rear of their fleet. I will suppose 20 sail of the enemy's line to be untouched. It must be some time before they could perform a manoeuvre to bring their force compact to attack any part of the British fleet engaged, or to succour their own ships, which indeed would be impossible without mixing with the ships engaged. The enemy's fleet is supposed to consist of 46 sail of the line, British 40. If either less, only a proportion number of the enemy's ships are to be cut off, British to be 1/4 superior to the enemy cut off. Something must be left to chance. Nothing is sure in a sea fight. Beyond all others, shot will carry away masts and yards of friends as well as foes. But I look with confidence to a victory before the van of the enemy can succour their rear, and then that the British fleet would most of them be ready to receive their 20 sail of the line, or to pursue them, should they endeavour to make off. If the van of the enemy tack, the captured ships must run to leeward of the British fleet. If the enemy wear, the British must place themselves between the enemy and captured and disabled British ships, and should the enemy close, I have no fear for the result. The second in command will, in all possible things, direct the movements of his line by keeping them so compact as to the nature of the circumstances will admit. Captains are to look for their particular line as their rallying point, but in case signals cannot be seen or clearly understood, no captain can do very wrong if he places his ship alongside that of an enemy. The divisions of the British fleet will be brought nearly to within gunshot of the enemy's centre. The signal will be made for the lee line to bear up together, to set all their sail, even the studding sails, in order to get as quickly as possible to the enemy's line and to cut through, beginning from the 12th ship from the enemy's rear. Some ships may not get through their exact place, but they will always be at hand to assist their friends. If any are thrown in the rear of the enemy, they will effectually complete the business of 12 sail of the line. Should the enemy wear together, or bear up and sail large, still the 12 ships composing in the first position of the enemy's rear are to be the object of the attack of the lee line, unless otherwise directed by the commander-in-chief, which is scarcely to be expected as the entire management of the Lee Line, after the intentions of the Commander-in-Chief are signified, is intended to be left to the Admiral commanding that line. The remainder of the enemy's fleet, 34 sail, are to be left to the management of the Commander-in-Chief, who will endeavour to take care that the movements of the second-in-command are as little interrupted as possible. Nelson and Bront, by command of the Vice-Admiral, J.N.O. Scott. Memorandum Book. The following interesting extracts are faithfully copied from His Lordship's Memorandum Book, written entirely with his own hand. Saturday, September 14th, 1805. At 6 o'clock arrived at Portsmouth, and having arranged all my business, embarked at the bathing machines with Mr. Rose and Mr. Canning, who dined with me. At 2, got on board the Victory at St. Helens. Wednesday, September 25th, 1805. Light airs, southerly. Saw the Rock of Lisbon, south-southeast, 10 leagues. At sunset, the captain of the Constance came on board, and sent my letters for England to Lisbon, and wrote to Captain Sutton, and the consul. The enemy's fleet had not left Cadiz on the 18th of this month, therefore I hope yet they will await my arrival. Saturday, September 28th, 1805. Fresh breezes, north-northwest. At daylight bore up, and made sail. At 9 saw the Etna cruising. At noon saw 18 sail, nearly calm. In the evening joined the fleet under Vice Admiral Collingwood. Saw the enemy's fleet in Cadiz, amounting to 35 or 36 sail of the line. Sunday, September 29th, fine weather. Gave out the necessary orders for the fleet. Sent Eurylaus to watch the enemy with the Hydra off Cadiz. Wednesday, October 9th. Fresh breezes easterly. Received an account from Blackwood that the French ships had all bent their topgallant sails. Sent the Pickle to him, with orders to keep a good lookout. Sent Admiral Collingwood the Nelson Truth. At night, wind westerly. Monday, October 14th. Fine weather. Westerly wind. Sent Amphion to Gibraltar and Algiers. Enemy at the harbour's mouth. Placed Defence and Agamemnon from 7 to 10 leagues west of Cadiz, and Mars and Colossus 5 leagues east of the fleet, whose station is from 15 to 20 west of Cadiz. And by this chain, I hope to have a constant communication with the frigates off Cadiz. Wednesday, October 16th. Moderate breezes westerly. All the forenoon employed forming the fleet into the order of sailing. At noon, fresh breezes, west-southwest, and squally. In the evening, fresh gales. The enemy as before, by signal from Weasel. Thursday, October 17th. Moderate breezes northwesterly. Sent the Donegal to Gibraltar, to get a round tier of casks. Received accounts by the diligent storeship, that Sir Richard Strachan was supposed to be in sight of the French Rochefort squadron, which I hope is true. Friday, October 18th. Fine weather, wind easterly. The combined fleets cannot have finer weather to put to sea. Saturday, October 19th. Fine weather, wind easterly. At 9:30 the Mars, being one of the lookout ships, made the signal that the enemy were coming out of port. Made the signal for the general chase southeast. Wind at the south. Cadiz bearing east-southeast by compass distance 16 leagues. At 3, the Colossus made the signal that the enemy's fleet was at sea. In the evening, made the signal to observe my motions during the night. For the Britannia, Prince, and Dreadnought to take stations as most convenient, and for Mars, Orion, Belice, Leviathan, Bellerophon, and Polyphemus to go ahead during the night, and to carry a light standing for the strait's mouth. Sunday, October 20th. Fresh breezes south-southwest, and rainy. Communicated with the Phoebe Defence and Colossus, who saw nearly 40 sail of ships of war outside of Cadiz yesterday evening, but the wind being southerly, they could not get out of the mouth of the strait. We were between Trafalgar and Cape Spartel. The frigates made the signal that they saw 9 sail outside of the harbour, sent the frigates instructions for their guidance, and placed the Defence Colossus and Mars between me and the frigates. At noon, fresh gales and heavy rain. Cadiz, northeast, 9 leagues. In the afternoon, Captain Blackwood telegraphed that the enemy seemed determined to go to the westward, and that they shall not do, if in the power of Nelson and Bront, to prevent them. At 5, telegraphed Captain Blackwood that I relied upon his keeping sight of the enemy. At 5 o'clock, Naiad made the signal for 31 sail of the enemy north-north-east. The frigates and lookout ship kept sight of the enemy most admirably all night, and told me by signal which tack they were upon. At 8 we wore, and stood to the southwest, and at 4 wore and stood to the northeast. Monday, October 21st. At daylight saw enemy's combined fleets from east to east-southeast, bore away. Made the signal for the order of sailing, and to prepare for battle. The enemy with their heads to the southward. At 7 the enemy wearing in succession. Then follow the prayer and codicil already inserted into this narrative, which conclude His Lordship's manuscript. End of section 5. Recording by FNH. Visit www.bookranger.co.uk.